elder law, and real property matters. RourkeLaw.com.
It's 10 o'clock. From WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, vaccines have dramatically lowered the spread of COVID-19 in the U.S., and a warm summer season will make it harder for the virus to spread. As Americans rapidly ditch their masks and sprint toward the goal of 70% of adults to receive one dose of the vaccine by July 4th, how are we doing? Our own Dr. Jim Lomax is here with a community COVID-19 update. Is there such thing as a queer plant? A queer garden? What does queer mean anyway? Radio Catskill's Jesse Spisato speaks to theater scholar and local landscape gardener Mimi McGurl about queer gardening. And Leif Johansson is here with an excerpt from his latest Radio Catskill podcast, Close to Home. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. Police in Austin, Texas are examining surveillance footage and asking the public for information on the shooting overnight in the city's downtown entertainment district. Authorities say a gunman wounded 13 people, two of them critically, before getting away. EU leaders attending the G7 summit are sparring with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. They want Johnson to keep his word on the Brexit deal amid trade tensions over Northern Ireland. The BBC's Rob Watson reports that Prime Minister Johnson is calling for pragmatism and compromise.
The G7 summit appears to be only heightening tensions between the EU and Britain over post-Brexit arrangements in Northern Ireland. It's reported President Macron told Boris Johnson he had to stick by agreements reached with Brussels if he wanted a reset in Anglo-French relations. But earlier, Britain's Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab blamed the EU for post-Brexit trade problems in Northern Ireland, accusing Brussels of being bloody-minded and purist over implementing post-Brexit arrangements. EU trust in Britain is low, and the antipathy appears to be mutual.
The Biden administration is weighing a bipartisan compromise with Congress on the president's massive infrastructure proposal. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports that a group of Senate Republicans and Democrats reached an agreement on a $1.2 trillion infrastructure package this week, but it's still far from a done deal.
The lawmakers call the agreement a realistic compromise to modernize the nation's infrastructure and energy technologies. The senators say the plan would be fully paid for and not include tax increases, bypassing President Biden's proposal to raise the corporate tax rate to offset the spending. The bipartisan effort is the most significant development yet in negotiations, but the plan is still facing skepticism from lawmakers on both sides. The deal was announced shortly after talks broke down between the president and the Senate's lead Republican negotiator this week. The White House says it appreciates the work to advance the legislation, but says questions need to be addressed, specifically around the details of both policy and pay-fors. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
Attorney General Merrick Garland is pledging to defend voting rights as the cornerstone of American democracy.
There are many things that are open to debate in America, but the right of all eligible citizens to vote is not one of them.
Speaking yesterday, Garland outlined a series of measures the Justice Department is taking in remarks to the department's Civil Rights Division. He said at least 14 states have passed new laws this year that make it harder to vote following former President Donald Trump's false claims about the 2020 election. You're listening to NPR News. It was 1 year ago today that a black man was shot by police in the parking lot of an Atlanta Wendy's restaurant. Johnny Kaufman reports from member station WABE that activists are planning protests to mark the death of Rayshard Brooks.
Activists plan to gather at the site of the Wendy's where Rayshard Brooks was shot by Officer Garrett Rolfe. The Wendy's was later burned and the site in Atlanta has been vacant for months. Brooks was 27 years old when officers found him asleep in his car at the fast food restaurant's drive-thru. Footage of the incident shows Brooks scuffle with the officers. He grabs a taser and fires it at them while running away. Rolfe then shot and hit Brooks in the back. The Atlanta police officer has been charged with murder, but his trial has yet to begin, following a drawn-out dispute over who should prosecute the case. A judge ruled last week that the Georgia Attorney General must appoint a new prosecutor, and a hearing has been scheduled for next week. For NPR News, I'm Johnny Kaufman in Atlanta.
In Orlando, Florida, marking 5 years since a Pulse nightclub shooting, 49 people were killed and more than 50 others were wounded. A remembrance ceremony is set for today. Dozens of survivors, family members of those who died, and first responders have been invited to the ceremony on the grounds of the club, which has been turned into a memorial. Massachusetts, a commercial lobster diver is getting a lot of attention this weekend. 56-year-old Michael Packard says he got caught inside a humpback whale's mouth while scuba diving yesterday off Cape Cod. He estimates he was in the whale's mouth for about 30 seconds before the whale surfaced and spit him out. He spoke to a local TV station about his ordeal after he was released from a hospital. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The U.S. is reopening far and wide, just in time for the summer, a sign that millions are ready to get their life back. But the loosening of restrictions has come as new COVID-19 vaccination rates decrease from spring highs, leaving some areas vulnerable to potential pandemic hotspots and risking the progress the nation has made. As of Friday, the country was averaging just over 1 million COVID-19 vaccine doses administered per day over the past week, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And while CDC data shows there's a 14% increase from the previous week, vaccination rates remain lower than the peak average in early April of 3.3 million per day. So what's the trend locally, and how are we doing with our vaccination process? Here's a community COVID update with our very own Dr. Jim Lomax. Good morning, Dr. Jim.
Morning, Tim. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you.
How are you feeling about these latest vaccination numbers issued by the Sullivan County Health Department this week?
Well, in looking at them, we're kind of in the same, if you look at New York State in general versus Sullivan County, and I'm sure that our surrounding counties are probably pretty similar. We're about 46% fully vaccinated. That's about a little over 30,000 people, and at least 53% have at least gotten one part of their vaccination. Statewide, it's 49% for full vaccination, 57% for at least one. Nationally, it's 43% fully vaccinated. However, I think what is obvious is that we're not going to get to that magic 70% vaccination rate probably anytime soon, because right now, just doing a back of the envelope calculation on my part, I look at it, and we're probably going to need at least 11,000 more people to get vaccinated to reach that 70% level. So it's, and again, it depends on what figures you use. So, but again, our wish that come July and August, everything would be opened up fully with no mask requirements and things like that, I just don't think we're going to make it. Mm. And we probably will not make it that way for the rest of the year.
Wow,
that's my opinion only. So
right, as a reminder, the President Biden's goal is for Americans to be 70% vaccinated by July 4th, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, as well as Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, among others, have said that they will reopen those states fully when 70% of the population has been vaccinated.
Right.
Why do you think we're not on track?
Well, I think there's again some of the issues. There is concern about the vaccines, and every time you hear about a possible side effect, that scares people away from it. Some people have just made up their mind they're not going to get it, and that, of course, pulls down the numbers significantly. I really think people here in this state and locally, those who wanted to get it have it now. And there's enough places now available you can just walk in and get a vaccine. So, again, you also have to realize that not everyone can get this vaccine. Certainly younger people below 12 cannot get vaccinated. And there's a certain group of people with immune problems that, at least at the present time, it's recommended that they do not get a vaccine. That draws the numbers down about 20%, 14 to 20%, depending which statistics you look at. So, again, not everyone can get a vaccine or should get a vaccine. But, again, I think there's just a lot of concern and or just decided people are decided they're not going to get a vaccination at all. And or the fact that they have had COVID and they feel they're fully immune, which is a maybe at best as far as research is showing.
Yeah, and as Public Health Director Nancy McGraw from Sullivan County announced that Sullivan County and partners have vaccinated 30,000 people against COVID-19. They're saying that approximately 60% of residents have fully completed their vaccinations.
Right. Depends what numbers you use.
Right.
She
took out less than 12 years old. But then District 2 legislator Nadia Rajic cautioned that we've crossed the 50% threshold, which is significant. But she said, quote, we're not done yet. The goal of all of us is to get protected against this virus, especially against the new, more virulent strains. And speaking of those strains, there's one that has seemed to pop up and caused a little bit of concern, the Delta COVID variant. Can you tell us about that strain?
Yeah, of the different types of variants that we have in our state, locally, Northeast, there's about four predominant ones. But what's now beginning to appear is the Delta variant. This is the one that created such devastation in India. It's not necessarily originated in India. Unfortunately, they tack names to them. It's really not very scientific. But the Delta is basically one that has a little different symptomatology to it, and it's mostly GI or stomach and bowel symptoms, and sometimes they can be quite severe. Also associated with it is this small blood clot formation, but this, again, is been part of the clinical picture of all the various types that we have floating around. In New York City, it's estimated that about 5% of people have the Delta variety. Probably as the summer goes, Delta will slowly probably grow in frequency. But again, when we get back into our cold weather, when people go back inside and no longer can stay away from each other, we might see the Delta becoming a predominant problem here, not only locally, but also in the state, nationally, and whatever. So it's something to be concerned about. The feeling is that the vaccine is effective against the Delta variant, but again, you have to get the vaccination.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to our own Dr. Jim Lomax about the latest COVID-19 news, including vaccinations and the new Delta variant. Jim, are the Delta variant symptoms new COVID symptoms, or are they similar?
Well, from very beginning, GI was always a small percentage of people in terms of predominant side effects. This one, Delta, where the GI effects is the predominant one, along with some joint pain, hearing loss. But again, people will have stomach pain, loss of appetite, vomiting, nausea, things of that nature. So it's again, COVID-19 variants have similarities to it, like the vascular component that is now causing the concern about myocarditis. Not that it's caused by Delta, but the myocarditis is now being reported now in people, young, usually males, 16 years of age and older. So again, there's about 350 cases that are being looked at by the regulatory agencies. And again, 350 or 370, depending how you count them, seems like a lot of people, but compared to the number of people who've gotten vaccines, it's still considered a rare side effect.
Right. And as these variants spread, like Delta variant, that's going to, of course, you know, in order to protect yourself, you need to get vaccinated as soon as possible, mask up, social distancing. But as we open up, is there a concern that this might spread faster because people are again happy to be out and happy to return to quote unquote normal life?
Well, it's wonderful to be outside and not have to wear a mask. Now, the issue is going inside is the issue. And again, just my own personal observations is some people feel since they've gotten the vaccine, they're bulletproof now and they're not going to get sick, and they will come in purposely and will, you know, get, again, the requirements of masking inside hasn't changed any. And a lot of people will walk in and say, I don't have to wear a mask anymore. And this is, creates a tension between the owners of the business or wherever it's at, and the individuals themselves, and that's unfortunate. Again, going inside, businesses have the right to require masking inside. And again, there's beginning to be a pushback of people who've got their vaccine. I'm clear. I'm fine. But what we don't know is even with full vaccinations, can any of us be a carrier of one of these vaccines? And again, there's a huge vulnerable population, particularly in southern states. Vaccination rates are very, very low in those states. And it might be this winter will be another significant hard time in the southern states.
Yeah, recently, National Institutes of Health Director Dr. Frances Collins said that states with low vaccination rates are, quote, sitting ducks for the next COVID-19
right.
outbreak. That would include some of those states that you're speaking of. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with Dr. Jim Lomax talking about the local COVID-19 vaccination efforts and updates. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
The press just spent 4 years in emergency mode while covering presidential politics. But that's all over, right?
There's still an emergency, but it looks different. We live in a two-party system, and one of the two parties is anti-democratic. That is a civic emergency.
Also, the role of critical race theory in the culture wars. On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4.
Bid.
Win.
Support.
Radio Catskill. WJFF's fabulous online auction is happening now.
Go to WJFFradio.org to make a bid on auction items.
Featuring products, services, and experiences from area businesses.
Locally sourced food, art, entertainment, and accommodations.
Register and bid now.
WJFF's fabulous online auction at WJFFradio.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're speaking with our own Dr. Jim Lomax with a community COVID-19 update. Jim, earlier you mentioned these heart inflammation cases, and the CDC has scheduled an emergency meeting about some of these rare cases of heart inflammation after a COVID-19 vaccination. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Oh, I think we've lost... we lost Jim. Sorry about that. We'll get him back. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we'll take a quick break and try to get you back.
This week in This American Life, for lots of us, when we try to describe our siblings to people, we have a story we tell to illustrate what they're like. And Emmanuel's sister has a story like that about her.
It's not that flattering.
It's not that flattering.
It was just the time that you punched me in the eye. We were like...
Sisters and the very particular things that happened between them this week.
This American Life, Saturday evening at 6.
Radio Catskill's fabulous online auction is bursting with great gifts and amazing items for you to bid on, including Black and Brass Coffee, Hotel Darby, The Upward Brewing Company, Bunny Love Flowers, The Fat Lady Cafe, One Grand Books. Register and bid now. Go to WJFFradio.org. Bid, win, support Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We will try to get Dr. Jim Lomax back, but in the meantime, we'll go to our next segment. Mimi McGurl is a freelance director, dramaturg, and landscape gardener in the Catskills. She's hosting a talk tomorrow at CAS called Queer Gardening, beginning with some basic science about the mating habits of flowers. The talk will then consider the range of flowers historically associated with gay and lesbian identity, and will end with a reimagining of the biblical Garden of Eden. Radio Catskills' Jesse Spisato spoke to Mimi McGurl.
Mimi McGurl is a freelance director, theater scholar, and local landscape gardener. This Sunday, she'll be giving a talk at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center about queer gardening. What is queer gardening, you might be wondering? I spoke to Mimi to find out. Can you start by defining what queer means to you?
Yeah, sure. In the talk, I'm going to spend some time talking about what the word queer means and how I'm going to be using it.
Okay.
I can't simply say, though, that I do identify as queer. And so it has as much to do with reading I've done in queer theory, and then also just personal reflection, and then thinking about how flowers, you know, grow and the communities of flowers and things like that.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I don't want to give too much about the performance away, but at your event, you'll be talking about whether there is such a thing as a queer plant or a queer garden. Uh-huh. So I'm wondering, is there?
You're going to have to come to find out, Jesse. If I just say it now, then everybody will know and everybody will just, you know, read the paper on Sunday at 2:00.
Totally. Okay, so no spoiler alerts in this segment.
I'll tell you though, queer, one of the main ways in which I use queer is in opposition to normal. Or everyday, or average, or typical. So if you can think of plants and flowers that are in opposition to all those things, then you could answer the question for yourself.
I feel like I want to challenge you and say, what is normal, you know?
You should come to this talk, Jesse. You really should.
Yeah.
Because it's partly to talk about plants, and it's partly to talk about queer identity, but it's also it's an opportunity to sort of think about just being in the world as a queer person, or about the way we as humans interact with plants and use them as metaphors and use them as symbols, you know? Yeah. Like Oscar Wilde would wear a green carnation when you go to a party or to the park, and it was this signal to the other guys in the park that might be interested in men, you know? So green carnations were literally used as a signal of queerness. So,
yeah, that's awesome. I wonder, do we need that like in today's day and age, since maybe, you know, people aren't as closeted anymore, luckily, thankfully, back then.
You know, that's a really good question, because what I feel like is happening is that identity categories are just getting much narrower, you know, that, you know, now there's like straight presenting bisexual tops or whatever. So like you're limited. You're really, really honing in on what it is that turns you on and what kind of partnership you want to have with somebody, what kind of relationships. Queer is just so much more general. It's so much more about not categorizing yourself and not making yourself live in one particular identity all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And people evolve. Mm-hmm. Humans change. Human sexuality changes. Human interest in other people changes. And so do flowers, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Are there other flowers that are associated with like the queer community, or?
Well, lavender is a big one. A lot of people, there's been books written about the lavender, you know, articles written about the lavender menace, and lavender, because it's probably mostly because it's a combination of pink and blue. Mm-hmm. You know, it has that sort of connotation to it. But there's also a book written in the late, or published in the late 70s called Lavender Culture. Mm-hmm. And it was a bunch of essays on what queer meant in the 1970s. Not just queer, but gay and lesbian, you know, alternative gender and sexualities. Although trans identity really was not being talked about much at all back then.
Yeah, totally.
There was Renee Richards, a tennis player. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And she was definitely, I'm 57. She was definitely a transsexual. That's what they called Renee Richards when she became public about it.
Right.
I remember that pretty carefully.
Trans, but we would call her trans today, I think, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, we will call her transgender, and I don't even know. She might still be alive. I hope she is, because she's definitely a pioneer. But it was interesting, too, because she – well, this has nothing to do with plants and flowers, so a tangent. Anyway, we should just have coffee sometime, Jesse.
Definitely.
All right.
let's do it. Okay, well, getting back to our you know, official talk, I read that your event will end with a reimagining of the biblical Garden of Eden. Can you give us a little sneak preview of what that might look like, or would that be giving too much away?
Well, I think I can tell you that gardens and trees are in virtually every culture's creation myth or collection of creation myths. Native American, African, you know, Yoruban, Igbo, Sumerian, in ancient Hindu culture, there's always a tree in a garden, and it's almost always considered a paradise place, a place of paradise, mm-hmm. of some sort or another. Islam, garden with milk and, you know, honey flowing. But the thing about the garden in the Bible specifically is that it really, really sets up an inside and an outside. Do you know what I mean? You're either in the Garden of Eden or you're cast out.
Right.
And so the question, and you have to conform to the standards of the person, you know, God or whoever, you know, this person is that made Adam and Eve. And you have to conform, you have to basically follow his wishes, however arbitrary they may seem.
Right.
And then you can stay in this paradise called the Garden of Eden. And if you do anything against his will, you get cast out.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's not a lot of choices.
No.
So anyway, I talk about all these different ways in which, what it means to get cast out.
Gotcha. Cool. That sounds fun. I'm looking forward to that. What do you hope attendees take away from your gardening talk?
I was just thinking about that today. I think that for people who know the word queer and, you know, but haven't like taken a queer studies course or, you know, don't have a queer kid who's explained it to them over and over again, they might be interested just in the definitions and the way it's evolved as a term, in terminology. They'll definitely learn some botany, especially reproductive, aspects of botany. And maybe a little bit of, a little bit of literary history when I talk about, the biblical story and 19th century stories of the way flowers became symbols for various things. So some history, but mostly I think the queer, like this term queer and then also, plants and flowers, but, you know, just general botany and horticulture. Those are my two, those are the things I know anything about.
Right.
So I really hope somebody learns something.
I know what you mean. I always think that there are like three things that I could give a talk about and that's it.
Yeah. My other one would be theater. You know, that's all I know about. And even the garden thing is pushing it because, I mean, I've been doing it for 16 years as a professional, but I didn't go to school for it or anything. So I'm totally self-taught. Plus I've had some amazing mentors. So, yeah. I've learned a lot and then I just do it all the time. So, and I'm a curious person, but I definitely don't have like the credential
right. That
I have for the theater part and the queer part.
I think it sounds like that's a credential enough. I feel like that you have like the 10,000 hours Malcolm Gladwell.
I think, yeah, I mean, you're probably right. I should figure that out. I should calculate.
Do you have a queer garden yourself? I assume yes.
I have a garden. and I am queer. And if that was all it meant, then yes, I have a queer garden.
Okay.
But I think most people who come to see my garden probably don't necessarily see it as queer right away, mm-hmm. because I live up in a cabin in the woods. I think it's already just a shock to show up here and that there's actually a building up here. Cause you know, the driveway is like a riverbed and you know, it's really, it feels like you're in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So my garden is a shock, but if you stay here for a little while, most people tend to enjoy it and see it as I think of it as my little piece of heaven.
Well, lastly, I was wondering what you like about gardening in the Catskills, like specifically, since it's such a magical place for nature.
Yeah, specifically in the Catskills. First of all, the longer I'm here, the more I like the weather because it's managed to stay cooler up here than in most other places. Mm-hmm. I love how much water we generally have. Like droughts are rare and, you know, things just love water. Last year we had an amazing amount of sun, but I could use a little more sun in the Catskills. But I think it's mostly just, it's a challenge. It's actually a really big challenge to make beautiful gardens up here because we don't have the heat and we don't have the soil. You know, the soil in the Catskills is kind of infamously bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a lot of maple trees that suck up a lot of water. So there's, it's challenging for sure, but I love it. I really do. I love it. I love my job.
Awesome. That's good.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I really hope people will come on June 13th because I'm really looking forward to just hearing what other people's thoughts are about about these topics. And it's a beautiful place. They're opening a cafe there. And there's going to be food and drink for sale, I believe. And the Hurleyville Performing Arts place is awesome. The Hurleyville Performing Arts Center is a really great place. So, and I think the textile store right nearby, I think she's going to have textiles on display that she dyed from plant materials, I think, is what she said. So there's nice things to do in Hurleyville.
Yeah, awesome.
And they have a beautiful little town garden with these Amsonia plants that are perfect right now, if you like Amsonia.
Cool.
Which is not necessarily a queer plant. I just like it.
But it's okay to like non-queer plants.
I hope so.
Mimi McGraw presents her gardening talk, Queer Gardening, tomorrow, Sunday, June 13th at 2 p.m. in person at the Tango Cafe at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. To find out more about the event, visit the website hurleyvilleartcenter.org.
That's Radio Catskills, Jesse Spassato speaking to Mimi McGurl about her queer gardening talk tomorrow at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. I misidentified the location in the introduction. My apologies for that error, but it is, in fact, at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center tomorrow at 2. It's going to be in person, indoors. It's free. It's at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and more information at hurleyvilleartcenter.org. We'll take a short break, and we found Dr. Jim. We'll talk more with him about our community COVID-19 update right after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
The latest top 40 British folk music album chart is just out. So next time on The Wagaload of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on WJFF Radio Catskill, we'll be hearing the newcomers and the high flyers. So join me, please, for The Wagaload of Monkeys chart show next Sunday afternoon at 3.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Earlier in the show, we were speaking with our very own Dr. Jim Lomax. We had a little technical error, but we've got him back. Dr. Jim, how are you?
Good. Sorry for getting disconnected from you. So.
That's okay. Mercury's in retrograde. I don't know what day it is.
Neither do I. So.
We were talking about all of the vaccination efforts and our goal to get to 70% in the country and if we're on track or not. But we also, you had mentioned something about some rare cases of heart inflammation after COVID-19 vaccinations. And now the CDC has scheduled an emergency meeting to discuss it. What's that all about? And should we be really concerned?
Again, it's part of the responsibility for the regulatory agencies to address any observed health condition and see whether it's associated with a particular, in this case, vaccination.
I know the agency has so far, this is the Centers for Disease Control, the advisory group. I think they're going to be having a meeting this week. The agency has documented about 226 cases in people 30 years of age and younger that meet the correct working definition of myocarditis or pericarditis, and that's basically inflammation of the heart muscle or the surrounding wrapping around the heart that gets inflamed from this. And they're trying to determine whether there is an association. What has been observed, however, is that for males, 16, mostly in men, not so much in women, but mostly in men, 16 years of age and older, within a few days of receiving their second vaccine, like if it were Moderna or Pfizer, that they would develop these symptoms, and that's chest pain, shortness of breath, and so in looking at it, if you're talking about 300 or 400 cases, that they're going to be determining whether or not is there a strong association. We do know from the beginning that vasculitis, you know, inflammation of the blood vessels has been a part of the COVID vaccine or COVID infection from the very beginning. The good news is that all these people recovered reasonably well, usually within a short period of time. They all had to be hospitalized, but again, they were able to be sent home. There will be probably always, like the nature of this disease, there'll be some what we call long haulers, where they may have residual pain or shortness of breath going forward, even though they're not in the hospital and they're clinically stable.
So they're meeting to confirm whether the vaccination was the cause of the heart problem. I'm looking into this a little bit here on a report saying that a lot of the vaccination, a lot of the evidence here is from people younger than age 30. Is that where this is showing up?
Younger than age 30.
Yeah.
So they were able to pick up a few cases age 16 because, again, some of the vaccines, I think Moderna had a 16-year age cutoff, you know. So, again, we're trying to get down to 12 years old, and that's before they open up to 12-year-old and older. They'll want to study this a little bit further.
And just remind folks, what are some of the symptoms of myocarditis?
Myocarditis basically usually is essentially pain with breathing, pain with in shortness of breath with exertion. The heart muscle doesn't work as efficiently as it normally does. And again, often associated with it is pericarditis, which again is inflammation of the sac that's around the heart. And again, when a person takes a deep breath, they will have discomfort and pain when they do that. So again, we probably from the very beginning of not recognize that myocarditis might have been associated with this condition. But again, they're going to make the determination.
Yeah.
My feeling is they'll consider it still a rare event.
Well, you know, vaccine safety experts are always on the lookout for possible side effects following any new vaccine.
Legally, they have to do this.
Yeah,
I mean, it's also developing public confidence in a vaccine is if they look at they never want to turn away a complaint. They want to fully investigate it. And so when you get a number of people with an association with the shot, then they're obligated to take a look at it.
It looks like the CDC is holding that meeting of its advisory committee on the immunization practices on June 18th to look further at the evidence and assess the risk of myocarditis following vaccination. And until definitive links are made, health officials overwhelmingly recommend COVID-19 vaccinations for everyone ages 12 and older. I assume that is the advice you would give as well, Dr. Jim?
I have my own opinion. I'm not a vaccine specialist, but I think again the events that can occur just randomly anyway. So that's why they try to separate random events from the strong association with a particular event, you know,
in this case, of a vaccination. So, but I think, you know, people still need to get vaccinated, and that's my concern, is the fact that people want to have no restrictions in their life, but in order to do that, people are going to have to step up. What's also important is what's not associated with, is it with the J&J vaccine. There's no association with myocarditis, which I find is interesting. Again, it's one shot. I think anyone who's had some kind of reaction after the second shot is familiar with this, you know, is the fact that, you know, they don't always feel so well for a couple days afterwards, after the second vaccine. So maybe just getting the single dose would be a way of avoiding that, avoiding this condition.
And as always, as we try to reach this goal of 70% of folks getting vaccinated, which is an ambitious goal, at least set by the current administration for July 4th, and I know that the local New York governor and the Pennsylvania governor have also set that as a goal. It's important that folks do go out and get vaccinated and can still continue to follow those safety protocols.
Yes, so they're going to be still with us for a while, whether we want to or not. But again, right now, this is a time of year we can be outside without a mask. And again, as long as we don't try to be in too crowded of a condition or an area. So again, there's been some positive changes. We can get back into restaurants, but again, they still have to have spacing. And again, it's state by state. Some states have no restrictions whatsoever. And again, my fear is that if they have a low vaccination rate, come the fall, we're going to start seeing flare-ups again down the road.
All right. Any other last advice you'd like to give folks?
Nope. Enjoy the summer the best we can. So,
Jim, thanks for coming back. Dr. Jim Lomax is our very own in-house doctor and, of course, volunteer. And also, I just want to make a side note, helping us out very much so, coordinating our fabulous online auction. So thank you for that.
Fun event. So go through the website. You can get into the auction site to take a look at what we have to offer people. It's going quite well right now, so we're about halfway to our goal already. So we've just been open now for a few days, so you don't want to lose out. So go back into the website and hit the yellow auction button, and it'll take you right into the program.
Bid, win, and support, as we say. Go to WJFFradio.org. Dr. Jim Lomax, thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you so much, Tim. Take care.
Take care. This is Radio Chatskill. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with Leif Johansson and the excerpt from his latest podcast, Close to Home.
Next time on Ask Me Another, we challenge the hosts of the ultra-athletic show American Ninja Warrior to some unathletic trivia. And from the Rugrats reboot, we'll play games with the actors who voice Chucky and Angelica, Nancy Cartwright and Cheryl Chase. Plus, we talk with singer Sarah Bareilles. So join me on NPR's Ask Me Another, the answer to life's funnier questions.
Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
So many generous businesses and organizations have donated to the fabulous online auction, including the Chi Hive, Catskill Cycle Works, the Calicoon Theater, Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, Calicoon Hills, One Grand Books. The fabulous online auction. Go to WJFFradio.org. Register and bid now.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Leif Johansson describes himself as a 20-something armchair policy wonk, born and raised in the Catskills, and heading out into the world, and he's got a lot of questions. He asked those questions on his Radio Catskill podcast called Close to Home. In his latest episode, he speaks to Christine Ellis Petrick, who calls herself a recovering journalist, and she talks about her journey co-founding the Java Love Coffee Roasting Company with her partner, clinical psychologist Jody Dawson. just in time for Java Love's 10th anniversary. Leif caught up with them, considering what makes the ultimate cup of joe and the importance of embracing change, and trying new things. Here's an excerpt from Leif Johansson's Radio Catskill podcast, Close to Home.
We call ourselves accidental entrepreneurs because we didn't go into starting Java Love thinking it would be successful. So probably not the best business plan to start a business and go, oh, it won't be successful. Our mission was really to become part of the economic development in the area. I mean, 10 years ago, Sullivan County and really our area, Bethel, Jeffersonville, Calicoon, it was not what it is today. And we saw an opportunity to work with some different organizations to train, to hire long-term unemployed people. And that kind of became our passion. Mm-hmm. And coffee's just the vehicle for how we've done that.
So where did your interest in coffee roasting come from? It doesn't sound like you've always been like, this is what I want to do in my life.
No. Jody is a clinical psychologist. She's a doctor. And I am, as I joke, I'm a recovering journalist. I was a journalist for 24 years. And we started Java Love when we both were full-time in our other careers.
Wow.
And so kind of how it started out was we wanted to open kind of a market to work with local artisans, farmers, and we were sourcing. Jody was trying to find a local organic coffee roasting company and had reached out to what at that time was Hudson Valley Coffee Roasters. And they said they weren't accepting any more wholesale clients. And they were actually looking to sell their company. So we were working with a couple consultants who said, buy it. We were like, buy a coffee roasting company? Why? And they were like, well, it's niche. If you're going to do something, do one thing and do it really well. So they said, you know, put in the contract that when you buy the company, they have to train you. So I'm besides being a horribly curious person and surviving, you know, being a journalist for 24 years, I am also a certified sommelier of all things. So I took my wine brain and easily turned it into a coffee brain and started roasting coffee. We moved the roaster into the Beekman Mill building, the historic Beekman Mill building on Cunnyunga Lake. They said it was 600 square feet. I'm thinking it was closer to 400 square feet. And so we had the roaster right there in the shop. And we started with a couple local wholesale customers. We started with maybe 10 online customers. And by the end of the first summer, we were just roasting on the weekends. You know, I'd go up maybe like one night a week and roast, and then we'd roast on the weekends and we'd be open. And when we knew we had something different or something verging on successful was when customers, second homeowners would go to head back to the city, and Sunday afternoon they'd stop by and buy a couple bags of coffee. Huh. And we're like, don't you live in Brooklyn? They're like, yeah, but there's something different about your coffee. And I'm like, man, you can't swing a cat in Brooklyn without hitting a coffee roaster. So I don't know what we're doing, but we're doing something right. And then it kept growing. And like I said, you know, we are accidental entrepreneurs. And so that's how we got into it. So Jody really started running the business side of it. I continued to focus on the roasting, and now 10 years later, We have 4 brick and mortar locations. Thank God, thriving online store, and I think we're up to about 60 wholesale accounts.
Opening that location in White Lake, I guess generally opening a coffee roaster in, you know, rural Sullivan County, did you feel like that presented unique challenges because of this kind of rural area that you were doing it in? And was there a sense as well on the other side that doing that here was an asset in any way?
Yeah, I think, like I said, you know, one of our core beliefs or core desires is to be part of economic development and prosperity in any place we are, any place we've decided to open. But really, Sullivan County and White Lake, and while it provided some challenges and continues to provide some unique challenges for, I mean, I think every business right now or every hospitality company right now is having hiring issues, having a difficult time finding staff and finding people who want to work. But, you know, there in the service industry, there's only, you know, it's, and especially being a small business, we can only pay so much an hour, but, you know, so we really have tried to balance and expand how much we're able to pay people by the hour. And then also work with, you know, our customers are amazing. They tip incredibly well, and they're very supportive of our staff. But I think opening a specialty coffee company in an area where, you know, where everybody was like, Sitco has pretty good coffee, you know, that's what people would tell us. So we're kind of like, well, you know, how do we take that bar and raise it up for people to have a better experience with coffee and kind of be surprised and delighted by what coffee can be and by what a small coffee business can be. So like I said before, you can come in and you can order your flat white or cortado or whatever the trendy coffee is of the day. All of our staff is trained as you know, they're great baristas, but then there's the meeting people where they are. And one of the best examples of that is we, I think our second year that we were over on Kanyanga Lake, we had a Hasidic gentleman come in to get a cup of coffee. And, you know, I think the second that happened, we were like, there's something different here. The fact that he came to our store to get coffee. And the next year, when we moved to our White Lake location, I was probably giving rabbi tours 3 or 4 times a week, which I loved. I'm like, okay, had you told me 2 years ago, this is what I would be doing, I'd be like, you're out of your mind. But coffee in and of itself, and its process is naturally kosher. That's it. We do nothing else in that machine. So the rabbis and all these organizations, the different camps were very curious, and we started getting more and more and more Hasidic gentlemen coming in, whether that be on Monday morning when they're driving back to the city, you know, on Sunday. And so we started making sure that in the summer we always have kosher milk, and we work with Bethel Dairy. So we work with that farm, and they're the most, if you've never had the Bethel Dairy milk, it's the most amazing milk you'll ever have. Mm-hmm. And it's organic, it's kosher. And, you know, is it pricey? Yes. But are we meeting our customers, our unique customer base, where they are? Absolutely. So it's just, that's that's a unique thing about our area, is we have people who have such drastic backgrounds. We have second homeowners, and we have people who have been in our area, raised, working, have been through every challenge our area has had, and they just continue to want to be a part of our community. So let's give them jobs. Let's make sure, you know, either they have a job to go to or they have an amazing coffee shop to go hang out in. That's, you know, it's an amazing area.
What is on the horizon for Java Love? As doors continue to open for you and Jody and the rest of the team, what are you guys looking at next?
That's a great question. First, we opened our doors to let everybody back in as of last week, and that was surprisingly emotional.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't think just emotional for us, emotional for the customers as well. And somebody told us we should video people as they come in for the first time after a while, because it's just a really beautiful experience that people are acknowledging the joy of getting to be in a space again. And it's, you know, what we had to do, you know, in putting up plexiglass and making sure that our team, first off, feels incredibly safe, you know, that when they come to work, we want to make sure they feel taken care of and they'll stay healthy and our customers will stay healthy. You know, opening the doors after a little over a year, you know, we still had pickup and door service and all of that. But, you know, Jody and I talked again and again during the pandemic that it was that sense of community we missed the most. We missed seeing people sitting and talking or just having an exchange with a barista, because we're that space. We're that space where people come to be seen by each other and just have a good cup of coffee, say hi. So having that again in all of our shops and having, we have more seating now inside in Bethel than we had before. So we've got both indoor and outdoor areas and we have more space because it's just so exciting to have people back.
That's Radio Catskills' Leif Johansson speaking to the owners of Java Love, an excerpt from his podcast, Close to Home, which is available on Radio Catskills' website. Go to wjffradio.org, and you can listen to the full episode, as well as other podcasts from Radio Catskill. While you're there, check out the fabulous online auction, and also you can find out community events and WJFF meetings and events that are coming up to wjffradio.org. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for hanging in there during this crazy rocky show today, but we appreciate you listening and have a great weekend.
Support comes from Rourke Law, Liberty, New York, a general law practice serving the Catskills and Delaware River Valley with an emphasis on estate planning, estate administration, elder law, and real property matters. RourkeLaw.com.
For 50 years, NPR has brought you perspective on the news, the big picture, the crucial context. Public radio is also a place for perspective you might not hear anywhere else.
50 years from now, when people are wondering what happened with the Minneapolis uprisings of 2020, they can literally come back to these boards and learn the entire history just from what's painted here.
Listen to NPR and hear every voice.
Radio Catskill, your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
more locally produced news, talk, and interview shows coming up. We've got Farm and Country next, followed by Catskill Character. At noon, it's Janice Adams talking about voter suppression. And at 1, Josh Fox spends the whole hour speaking with activist and author Marianne Williamson, coming up on Radio Catskill. Today's forecast, cloudy skies, a few showers this afternoon, high of 69. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms later in the day, high 74. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008. Proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. Damascus.